ecology can make it easier for people to understand like all of these policy changes and like kind of wade through some of the myths and propaganda that's out there around trees to like have a clearer perspective.
Melissa Mulko and Paola Smith, thank you for taking the time today.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you.
That was Melissa Mulko and Paola Smith of Resilience Design. They're teaching a course through Portland Underground Graduate School called Tree Allyship. That's on Saturday, November 1st. For more information on how to attend the course, you can find the details at PUGSPDX. That's PUGSPDX.com. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Dave Johnson.
KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If your vehicle has a clean title, we can take it as a donation. If your vehicle isn't working, we can work with that too. Call our car donation experts at the Center for Car Donations to find out more info, ask questions, and support KBOO. Call 877-KBOO-123. That's 877-526-6123. Or go to our website, kboo.fm/vehicle.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the First Unitarian Church, presenting Targeting Doctors in Gaza, Breaking the Silence, at 7 p.m. on Thursday, October 30th. The event will include a vigil for murdered Palestinian healthcare workers, a short film of a doctor's report on Gaza, and more. Event info available at firstunitarianportland.org/events-calendar.
And now it's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind, your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
He is considered a sacred figure by both Republicans and Democrats.
He led the nation through its greatest crisis.
He's on our currency. We build monuments to him.
He's the greatest president the United States has ever had.
Today, the big question that people are asking is, was Abraham Lincoln gay?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Slovakia limits genders and bans surrogacy. Rainbow Rewind marks memorable October observances, and documentary uncovers Lincoln's gay love life. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Melanie Keller.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 4th, 2025.
Male and female are the only two genders to be recognized in Slovakia. Lawmakers approved a constitutional amendment on September 26th that also bans surrogacy and limits adoption to married couples. A 2014 amendment already defined civil marriage as exclusively heterosexual. Schools will now be required to comply with the cultural and ethical positions of the Slovak Constitution. With a shaky coalition of parties ranging from the far right to the far left, Prime Minister Robert Fico strongly supported the amendment. He called it necessary to defend traditional values against the liberal ideology that was spreading like cancer in his country. There had been doubts that Fitzo's 78-seat ruling coalition could reach the required three-fifths majority of the 150-seat National Council to pass the law. However, 12 opposition council members helped barely meet that threshold. Although Slovakia joined the European Union in 2004, the amendment claims the Central European nation's national sovereignty in cultural and ethical matters. That could lead to clashes over queer rights like those between the EU and Viktor Orban's Hungary. Slovak PM Fico has also angered fellow EU member states by meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin at least four times in the past year. This amendment directly endangers our EU membership, bringing us even closer to authoritarian Russia, according to the Slovak LGBTQ and intersex rights group Iniciava Inokost. The group's Facebook post called the vote a violation of human rights and our international obligations, and one of the most dangerous decisions the Slovak parliament has ever made.
Japan's government is taking 9 new baby steps towards full marriage equality. Inclusion under the laws and ordinances, such as the disaster condolence grant, essentially mean same-gender relationships will be treated the same as de facto heterosexual marriages as of September 30th. 24 other couples' statutes were extended to same-gender couples in January, including the Public Housing Act, the Domestic Violence Prevention Act, the Child Abuse Prevention Act, and the Land and House Lease Act. 3 of Japan's 8 regional high courts ruled in 2024 and 25 that denying civil marriage to same-gender couples is unconstitutional. Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba's coalition government has bowed to those decisions in tiny increments. However, the power to open the institution to queer couples rests with the National Diet, the nation's legislature. Not untypically, lawmakers lag behind the citizenry. Recent polling shows nearly 70% of the Japanese public supports full marriage equality. Even Ishiba has admitted that opening civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples would make the nation happier.
There's nowhere for Scotland's transgender public school students to relieve themselves anymore. This due to a government order forcing all student and staff to use bathrooms and other sex-segregated campus facilities that match their biological gender. Teachers report that their trans students are now limiting food and drink to avoid the situation, according to Pink News. Gender-neutral bathrooms are an option under the guidance issued on September 29th. However, transgender students are now also barred from participating in sex-segregated physical education classes based on their gender identity. The UK's Supreme Court controversially ruled in April that only biological women are legally women under the country's Equality Act. A judge later required 6 Scottish schools to provide separate bathrooms for male and female pupils. Scotland's Education Secretary Jenny Gilruth claimed that the new guidance provides clarity following those 2 rulings. CEO Maya Forstater of the human rights charity Sex Matters disagrees. She calls the new guidance muddled and ideological, unlawful, and unnecessarily complex. The Educational Institute of Scotland represents more than 80% of Scotland's teaching staff. In the words of their press statement, the new guidance falls short of providing clarity and reassurance that the rights of transgender and non-binary pupils will be preserved in the current legal context, and how schools and teachers can continue to balance competing statutory obligations. The Institute's General Secretary, Andrea Bradley, adds, "Decisions will be left up to individual local authorities and schools, while the guidance fails to address how significant concerns about the health, safety, and well-being of transgender pupils will be addressed if pupils cannot use facilities in accordance with their gender identity."
The Canadian government is advising residents with gender-neutral passports to reconsider plans to travel to the United States. The October 1st Department of Global Affairs update to its U.S. travel advice page warns, While the government of Canada issues passports with the X gender identifier, it cannot guarantee your entry or transit through other countries. An executive order issued soon after Donald Trump's second presidential term began declared that there are only two legal genders in the U.S., male and female. Secretary of State Marco Rubio followed with a directive limiting gender markers on passports to only male or female. Lower court rulings have prevented the implementation of those limitations, and the Trump administration is appealing to the Supreme Court. The Canadian government counts some 3,600 citizens who have chosen the X gender marker for their passports, according to the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. That option has been available to Canadians since 2019. Jennifer Young of the U.S. Embassy in Canada said that they cannot comment on the new travel advisory due to the current U.S. government shutdown.
Gay men looking to hook up in the cruisy toilets of New York City's Penn Station are being caught up in a massive sting operation. Unencumbered by the city's sanctuary policy, the federal Amtrak police are working in association with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. 200 men have reportedly been arrested for public lewdness since June, and at least one legal asylum seeker was detained. He was released after a month in custody. One man told the independent online publication The City that he was literally just using the urinal while wearing a rainbow wristband when he was arrested and handcuffed to a wall. He says he overheard an Amtrak officer say, "Yeah, we got three more pervs." He was detained there for 3 hours and the charges were eventually dropped. New York City Council LGBTQ plus caucus co-chairs Eric Botcher and Tiffany Caban wrote a letter to Amtrak President Roger Harris, calling for an immediate end to the sting operation and assurances that such civil rights violations would not be repeated.
Finally, the right-wing U.S. echo chamber is apoplectic over Harvard University's latest hire, Lahore Vajistan. That's the drag queen stage name of Karim Kubchadani, the F.O. Matheson Visiting Professor of Gender and Sexuality. Matheson was a highly regarded openly gay Harvard professor. Kubchadani is visiting from Tufts University, where he's an associate professor of theater, dance, and performance studies. At Harvard, he'll be teaching queer ethnography in the autumn semester and RuPaulitics, drag, race, and desire next spring. Elon Musk's ex was all abuzz with homophobic abuse at Kubchadani and Harvard, belittling the drag performer's academic worth. Kubchadani holds a master's degree and a PhD in performance studies. His research has focused on the confluence of queer nightlife, global politics, ethnography, and the South Asian diaspora and drag. His scholarly work has been published in at least seven academic journals, including the Journal of Asian American Studies and The Scholar and Feminist Online. The oldest university in the United States has been at loggerheads with the Trump administration for months over its allegedly too woke DEI hiring and curriculum. In an interview with Theater Topics, Professor Kubchadani talks about lecturing at Northwestern University and the University of Texas at Austin in his drag persona. It's not clear if he'll do the same at Harvard, but he told the publication, "You can't teach in less than 6-inch heels. But then again, you can't do a lot of things with less than 6 inches.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending October 4th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Melanie Keller. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
There's no downside. Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
And now it's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind, your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
From hard-won victories to cultural firsts, from the unknown to their iconic legends,
we celebrate the people and events that remind us how far we've come and how far we still shine. I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Brian DeShazer. This week, we celebrate the birth of a few remarkable queer voices. Born October 1st, 1991, Gus Kentworthy is an openly gay American freestyle skier and an advocate for LGBTQ visibility in sports.
Also born on October 1st, 1991, Abby Stein. Abby is known for being the first openly trans woman raised in an Hasidic community, and for her work building support for trans people of Orthodox Jewish background.
Now let's rewind some queer key moments. On October 1st, 1989, Denmark becomes the first country in the world to recognize registered partnerships for same-sex couples.
And tragically, during the first week of October 1998, Matthew Shepard was brutally attacked. His murder became a galvanizing moment in the United States for hate crime legislation and the movement against anti-LGBTQ violence.
This story was reported on by Cindy Friedman on This Way Out's News Wrap the week of October 12th, 1998.
The week began with the death of Matthew Shepard and ended with his funeral in an apparent gay bashing case which has gripped the national interest to an unprecedented degree. The previous week, two young men reportedly lured the University of Wyoming student out of a Laramie bar and into their truck by pretending to be gay themselves, only to rob him, beat him mercilessly, and tie him to a fence, where he was not discovered until as much as 18 hours later after a night of near freezing temperatures. After 5 days in a coma from having his head smashed by a gun butt, Shepard succumbed early October 12th.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind.
Because our stories aren't just in the past, they're the pride that powers our future.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. Stay tuned, more This Way Out is just ahead.
Was Abraham Lincoln bisexual? This Way Out's Brian DeShazer talks to a documentarian whose recent film investigates some queer evidence about the 16th President of the United States.
He is considered a sacred figure by both Republicans and Democrats.
He led the nation through its greatest crisis.
He's on our currency. We build monuments to him.
He's the greatest president the United States has ever had.
Today, the big question that people are asking is, was Abraham Lincoln gay?
In the 19th century, for many men, their closest relationships were other men, and same for women.
Men could live with another man when they're single, and often did, and shared beds.
Lincoln probably slept in the same bed with men more than he did with women.
One of the things that fascinates scholars is his bedding down with Joshua Speed for 4 years.
There is love between those two men.
When you put together all of the evidence, it's really startling.
Lincoln has a type: dashing, daring.
We have this notion that if you have an attraction like that, boom, that's your orientation.
Sexuality through the mid-19th century was far more fluid.
But for someone who wanted a political career, it was mandatory that you have a wife.
Dear Speed, I shall be very lonesome without you. Yours forever, Lincoln.
What you have in the 19th century was very strict marriage culture. Get married, and then everything is possible.
Captain David Derrickson became friends with Lincoln while they were living here at the cottage.
There is a soldier here devoted to the president, and when Mrs. L is not home, sleeps with him. What stuff?
He was seen wearing the president's nightshirt.
If you want a smoking gun, here it is.
But then you see all these shifts to the end of the 19th century.
Freud was devastated to sexuality,
defining very rigid categories.
And they're saying if a man loves another man, it's unnatural.
Homosexuality is a mental illness.
It was not only wrong, it was punishable. If Lincoln were to look down today, he would see the United States at a particularly fragile moment.
History is so important because it allows us to understand who we were, who we might become.
Lincoln's legacy is the insistence on equality.
We have been in the house of power.
If you can accept a queer Lincoln, you can accept queer people overall.
He should inspire us to achieve a true democracy for everyone.
I am here talking with Sean Peterson, the director, producer, co-writer, and co-editor of a documentary called Lover of Men, The Untold History of Abraham Lincoln. Welcome to This Way Out, Sean.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
When did you first learn about this notion that Lincoln might be gay?
A book came out by Clarence Tripp, who was one of Alfred Kinsey's sex researchers. And he put out a book called The Intimate World of Abraham Lincoln. Tripp is the first one that's writing a historical book based on evidence showing Lincoln's proclivity for other men. And what's interesting too is Tripp is a gay man, a sex researcher who worked in the late 40s and in the 1950s, looking at this evidence through a queer lens and through a sex researcher's lens. And the documentary really becomes more than just Lincoln's story. It becomes the story of human sexuality going all the way back to the beginning of time, and trying to show that Lincoln wasn't some sort of outlier, that really we as modern sexual beings are the outliers. To me, it's an amazing thing about him. It's a wonderful thing that Lincoln was queer. But to the greater world, this is problematic, and you have to fight against it. It's this idea of like, well, prove it to me. And I think there's several points in this, particularly with Lincoln. One, no one in the Victorian period was writing about their sexual, you know, escapades, whether you were having sex with the opposite sex or the same sex. It just wasn't something that was written about. And so it speaks to the time. So where is Lincoln's letter that says, I held you in my arms, Joshua Speed, and made love to you? It didn't exist because he didn't write that about his wife. He didn't write it about, most men did not write it about their wives either. So it's a cultural thing at the time too. The other thing they point to as a burden of proof is like, well, Lincoln had four children. Like, come on, he married a woman and had four children. Herman Melville had kids. Lord Byron had kids. Oscar Wilde had kids. You know, Emerson had kids. Like all these people that we point to as, you know, clearly no one's arguing that these artists were not having sex with men. I think part of the problem, too, is that Lincoln is the president of the United States, the godfather of the grand old party. You know, John Stoffer, who is the chairman of the English department and former chairman of the American Studies Department at Harvard, who's in our film, he had a scholar once say to him, if I lose my faith in Lincoln, I lose my faith in the United States.
Right, right. So, you know, I wanted to note, too, that in your film, the historians and experts, you know, come from Harvard, Rutgers, Occidental, Wellesley, Columbia, Brown University, University of Massachusetts, University of Utah. So you really did do your due diligence to bring a community of historians together to talk about this subject. How easy or hard was it to get those people to the film and go on camera to talk about, again, something that is so sensitive that it almost feels dangerous, particularly in this time and age, betray or belie an assumption about the American identity?
That's a good question. I mean, part of it was that I consciously wanted to choose people in the Ivy League and people that were in these storied institutions to also not make this seem like a conspiracy theory film. I think a lot of these people were very open to talk about it because this is a lot of their life's work. Now, these are brave individuals. If I was making this film right now in 2025, would they pause? Possibly. It is way more dangerous in 2025 than it even was when I started making this film in 2023. What we were hoping with the film is to try to create an empathy around Lincoln and around human sexuality. What we're seeing in the film is that it's not just okay to be sexually fluid, but throughout all of human history, it's very human to be sexually fluid, to have same-sex intimacies. It's not only okay, it's completely normal, and heteronormativity, being heterosexual as the baseline, as the norm, is completely a new idea in the scope of human history.
You are listening to Sean Peterson, writer, director, producer, and co-editor of the film Lover of Men, The Untold History of Abraham Lincoln, on This Way Out. I'm Brian DeShazer. To hear the full interview on our podcast, visit thiswayout.org.
Okay, so when you look at the four men that we have evidence of in Lincoln's life, are Billy Green, who he met when he first moved away from his father in the town of New Salem, and they worked in a store together, and they lived in the back of the store, and they shared a cot for 18 months. And they had an intellectual relationship because Billy Green was one of the first people Lincoln met that was his own age that could read and knew grammar. So they were learning to read together and practicing grammar, but staying in this little cot, sleeping together. And the thing that's interesting about Billy Green is that one of the things he said was that Lincoln had the most perfect thighs a human being could have. And that was really indicating, you know, when you look at it through a queer lens, complimenting Lincoln's thighs, femoral sex, having sex with someone's thighs. And it really shows a light that is, you know, what's going on. There's more to them just being pals and sharing a cot. But also 18 months. Clearly, in that 18 months, you're working in a store that makes beds. You could have your own cot. You could, you know, sleep on a bearskin rug on the floor. You know, like they didn't need to share the cot. They shared the cot because I think they liked it, you know? So shortly after that, Lincoln becomes a legislator and moves to Springfield, where he meets Joshua Speed, who really would become the love of his life. Because initially, Lincoln goes to Speed's store, he's a shop owner, refined Southern gentleman, and looks to buy a bed from Speed to put in his law office to sleep. And Speed immediately says, oh, no. Don't worry, if you can't afford the bed, just you can move in with me. The day they meet, Speed's offering to share a bed with Lincoln, and Lincoln takes him up on it. And it's like, okay, maybe Lincoln was a little broke at the time. Get on his feet, stay with Speed for a couple weeks, a month, maybe a year, and then he'll go and get his own place. But they shared a bed for 4 years. While Lincoln was a double income earner, where he was making, you know, money as a lawyer and a legislator, easily could have afforded his own place. So that's Lincoln and Speed. And when they break up, because Speed has to, his father dies and has to move back to Kentucky, it is the most intense suicidal period of Lincoln's life. And there's records of him having to remove razors from his room. He stops going to the legislature. He loses all this weight. He is devastated. And I think what's important is the letters that you start seeing once Speed moves away. Lincoln writes letters. Now, before this, they're in the same room together. There's no letters because they're with each other every day. But once he's gone, you see these letters. Now, the letters from Speed back to Lincoln are missing. Lincoln was terrible at keeping, you know, track of his stuff. But the letters to Speed. And if you look at these letters, they are so clearly love letters. And you have to put it into context because Lincoln was a lawyer. He was a politician. If you look at all of his writings, they're very dry. They're very formal. He might put a joke in there. He might say something kind of warm, like, how are you doing? Or how's your wife? But the longing and the heart-wrenching quality and the poetry that are in these letters to Speed are unlike anything written in Lincoln's body of work. He writes to Speed in February 25th of 1842, I feel somewhat jealous of both of you now. You will be so exclusively concerned for one another that I shall be forgotten entirely. I shall be very lonesome without you. How miserable things seem to be arranged in this world. If we have no friends, we have no pleasures. And if we have them, we are sure to lose them and be doubly pained by the loss. And, you know, again, he would assign his letters, yours forever, you know, yours forever. And he was not signing that off to many people. Speed is the person he wrote that to the most. Never signed a letter like that to his wife. And the question is, and this is interesting, Tom Balcerski, who's in the film, I got to sit in one of his classes at Occidental and listen to his young queer students in the class talk about this. And they're like, well, listen, even if they didn't have penetrative sex, the fact that they are cuddling in bed every night for 4 years is queer. That is queerness. When two men are writing love letters to each other. So again, our 21st century idea that gayness or queerness means penetrative sex is not something that applied back then. This larger transcending sexuality, transcending queerness, is two men that can express deep love and physically bond to each other and live with one another, and then but also feel like you can't live without each other.
Sean Peterson, thank you for joining us on This Way Out. You can find where to stream the film at loverofmen.com. Join us next time for the story of Abraham Lincoln's other two documented lovers, Elmer Ellsworth and Captain David Derrickson. I'm Brian DeShazer for This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Melanie Keller and Tanya Kane Perry and produced by Brian DeShazer. He also produced this week's Lincoln biopic feature and wrote and hosted the Rainbow Rewind with Sherry Lunn. Elton John, the United States Army Ceremonial Band, and the United States Marine Corps Band performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Yavanna Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating 50 years together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on Radio Phoenix, Phoenix, Arizona, WPKN Bridgeport, Connecticut, CJLY Slocum Valley, New Denver, Nelson and Crawford Bay, British Columbia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
Hey yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
It's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind.
This week, we celebrate two remarkable queer voices.
I feel like you look at Lincoln, the way he loved men and the way he loved his wife. I guess you would say if you had to apply queer or pan or bi, whatever you want to apply to him, he was open. So his heart was open to love others.
Dear Speed, I shall be very lonesome without you. Yours forever, Lincoln.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Top U.S. court considers conversion therapy bans, speaking up and coming out October anniversaries, and Lincoln's Lover of Men saga continues. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Marcos Najera.
And I'm Rhett.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 11th, 2025. Conversion therapy is on trial in the United States Supreme Court, which could quash bans against the discredited practice in more than two dozen states. The American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Psychiatric Association, and literally every professional medical and mental health organization in the country condemns the claim that sexual orientation and gender identity can be changed through counseling and prayer. The United Nations has compared it to torture. However, the High Court heard oral arguments on October 7th in a case that defends conversion therapy on free speech grounds. The specific case involves a Christian licensed therapist backed by the notoriously anti-queer legal assault team, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Kaylee Childs counsels clients seeking what she calls religiously informed care that comports with traditional biblical understandings of sexuality and gender. Her lawyers argue that a 2019 Colorado law known as the Prohibit Conversion Therapy for a Minor Act violates her First Amendment rights. The law prohibits and prescribes disciplinary action for what it defines as efforts to change an individual's sexual orientation, including efforts to change behaviors or gender expressions, or to eliminate or reduce sexual or romantic attraction or feelings toward individuals of the same sex. In addition to Colorado, similar bans now stand in more than 24 other states, Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia. To most observers, the majority of the justices seem to favor Chiles' claims that the conversion therapy ban restricts her religious and free speech rights. Far-right Justice Samuel Alito flatly called the ban blatant viewpoint discrimination. Justice Clarence Thomas doubled down, suggesting that the ban might be a prior restraint on speech. Colorado Solicitor General Shannon Stevenson defended her state's law. She argued that it protects minors from harmful and discredited practices, that it regulates professional conduct, not speech. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson agreed, seeing the law as consistent with a state's traditional authority to oversee medical practices. Several scholars cited by Chiles' Alliance Defending Freedom lawyers have complained that their research on conversion therapy was deliberately misrepresented as supporting the practice. Linda Robinson's 20-year-old son Ryan killed himself after enduring years of conversion therapy. Her story is part of an amicus brief filed by parents of several young conversion therapy victims. Her heartbreaking words on MSNBC have gone viral.
This is not a left or right issue. This is an issue of parents loving their kids and wanting to keep them safe. It was always sold as a way to make a child whole and holy. And yet, it did the opposite. It completely broke Ryan's confidence. And when we taught Ryan to hate his sexuality, we were teaching him to hate himself. These programs prey on vulnerable parents, and they promise things they must know they don't work.
The Supreme Court's decision in Chiles versus Salazar is expected to be announced in late June 2026.
A volleyball league in Colombia's Antioquia region must reverse its ban on transgender competitors by the order of the Constitutional Court. Emiliana Castrillon Jaramilla is identified by the Edge Media Network as the trans athlete who sued the league. She had participated in matches for more than a decade before the Liga Antioqueña de Voleibol jumped on the anti-trans bandwagon. Suddenly, she was banned midway through a tournament. Her longtime participation prior to the ban was cited by a three-judge panel of the High Court on October 1st. It decided that the action violated her human and constitutional rights to dignity and equality. Judges Natalia Angel Cabo and Jose Fernando Reyes Cuartos declared that there is no scientific evidence to suggest that trans athletes have an inherent competitive advantage over cisgender athletes. The two judges noted that physical ability is more commonly linked to body composition, training, and nutrition. They also pointed out that no other players ever complained. Judge Cristina Pardo Schlesinger abstained. The panel's majority ordered the regulatory officials to allow Jaramillo to finish competing in the tournament. With help from the Ministry of Sport, they are to change the policy and revoke any measures excluding trans people from participating in their sporting events. Advocacy groups in Colombia and around the world praise the court's decision for bucking the trans sport ban trend. Those policies, primarily targeting trans girls and women, reinforce debasing stereotypes and are often based on pseudoscientific assumptions about biological advantage.
Florida's war on rainbow crosswalks continues even during October's LGBTQ History Month with the bulldozing of an iconic installation on Ocean Drive in Miami Beach. The city failed to stop the demolition by Republican Governor Ron DeSantis and his Department of Transportation in court. The state claims that it's simply enforcing bans on public funds being used for political purposes. It offers no evidence for its assertion that the artwork confuses and distracts drivers. Those arguments are disputed by the only openly queer elected official in Miami Beach. Commissioner Alex Fernandez calls the erasure a total waste of taxpayer dollars to destroy a crosswalk that has proven to be among the safest on Ocean Drive. The DeSantis administration is paving over rainbow crosswalks in cities across the state. One of the first to go was at the intersection near the Pulse Nightclub Memorial in Orlando. Axios reports that the city of Miami Beach plans to fight back by installing rainbow benches across the city, but it's unclear when that might happen.
A decorated FBI trainee is fired for displaying a rainbow flag on his desktop. A victim of embattled U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation Director Kash Patel and the pettiness of the Trump administration. The popular sacked intern was also known to have displayed a pride flag at his workstation when he was a field office diversity program coordinator under the Biden administration. Sources say that such displays in the past would not have violated agency policies. The employee was undergoing new agent training at the FBI's academy in Quantico, Virginia, when he received a letter from Patel ordering his immediate dismissal. It said he was being summarily terminated for poor judgment and an inappropriate display of political signage. Patel has been purging the agency of any staff members thought to be disloyal to Donald Trump. He recently fired more than a dozen FBI agents who took a knee while conducting crowd control in 2020 during a confrontation with a group of demonstrators in the nation's capital, an action that appeared to de-escalate the situation but drew sharp criticism from conservatives inside and outside the bureau. At least three senior FBI officials are suing the bureau on charges that their terminations were orchestrated by Trump sycophants.
Finally, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney came to the Oval Office on October 7th for a discussion of trade issues, but ended up enduring an off-topic tirade by President Donald Trump instead.
We have no men in women's sports. We have, I mean, basic things. We're not going to take your child away and change the sex of your child. We're not going to do things like that. What they're doing to the country is so incredible. And they got away with it with all their woke crap, and now it's stopped.
Carney has four children. Sasha Carney is non-binary and spoke in 2019 about their relief at coming out while studying at Yale University in the U.S. More than 77% of Canada's exports go to the United States, so the advocate speculated that Carney chose to ignore Trump's diatribe in furtherance of good trade relations. However, Canadian critics have condemned the PM for sitting silently by during Trump's anti-trans barrage. Meanwhile, critics south of the border continue to normalize the president's senescent ramblings.
What they're doing to the country is so incredible, and they got away with it.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending October 11th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Rhett. Stay healthy.
And I'm Marcos Najera. Stay safe.
I'm Stephen Fry. The great Oscar Wilde once said, "The only sin is stupidity." That is why it is imperative that we stay as informed as possible. An excellent way to do this is to listen to This Way Out, the international radio program for all our sexually diverse communities.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
And now it's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind, your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
From hard-won victories to cultural firsts, from the unknown to the iconic legends.
We celebrate the people and events that remind us how far we've come and how far we still shine. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. This week, we celebrate two remarkable queer voices. Transgender rights advocate, author, and television personality Jazz Jennings was born October 6, 2000. Jazz is well known for sharing her coming out and transition at a young age, breaking ground in media visibility for trans youth.
Born on October 8, 1958, Urvashi Vaid was an Indian-American LGBTQ rights activist, lawyer, and writer, notable for her leadership at the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, AIDS activism, and for her work on intersectional justice. Urvashi sadly passed away in 2022 after a battle with cancer, but her voice lives on here on This Way Out. Here's a clip of her from a May 21, 1998 lecture, courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archives.
Articulating this broad vision, a political, cultural, economic vision that comes out of our experience of difference, that comes out of our perspectives as gay people, but that goes into, you know, linking us with other people. We need to take up the project of building a progressive movement, pro-gay, pro-lesbian, pro-bisexual, pro-transgender, pro-woman, pro-black, pro-environment, pro-labor, pro-people with AIDS, progressive.
Now let's rewind to some key queer moments. October 8th marks International Lesbian Day. Celebrated mostly in Australia and New Zealand, this day honors lesbian culture, history, and contributions.
And on October 11th, 1987, approximately 750,000 people marched in Washington, D.C. for LGBTQ rights. Major issues included legal protections, equality, AIDS funding, and visibility. It was one of the largest queer rights gatherings of its time and helped galvanize subsequent activism.
1 year later, on October 11, 1988, activists Robert Eichberg and Jean O'Leary created National Coming Out Day to raise awareness and celebrate the LGBTQ community. They stressed that no one should come out until they felt safe and ready.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind.
Because our stories aren't just in the past, they're the pride that powers our future.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. Stay tuned, more This Way Out just ahead.
History is evolving, as our next guest tells us. This Way Out's Brian DeShazer continues his conversation with a filmmaker whose recent documentary is about how historians' understanding of Abraham Lincoln is an example of that evolution.
He is considered a sacred figure by both Republicans and Democrats. He led the nation through its greatest crisis.
He's on our currency. We build monuments to him.
He's the greatest president the United States has ever had.
Today, the big question that people are asking is, was Abraham Lincoln gay?
Last time on This Way Out, we spoke with filmmaker Sean Peterson about his documentary, Lover of Men, The Untold Story of Abraham Lincoln. Sean told the story of Lincoln's first two documented male lovers, Billy Green and Joshua Speed. This week, we pick up the story with the other two men in Lincoln's life.
Lincoln and Speed, you know, Speed moves away and Lincoln's a legislator for a while. He, at one point, runs for the Senate in Illinois and loses. He loses his taste for politics and just becomes a very successful lawyer for a very, you know, for a decade in Illinois. Then he ends up running for president. Back then, there was this, they fetishized really elaborate military parades and regalia. And there was this young kid from New York who would go from town to town in his elaborate military outfits with his crew. And it's basically going, you go to the fairgrounds and you watch these guys do all these military marches, and they're almost like dances. And they're wearing these bright outfits. They're called Zouaves, and they're based on these French military guys. And they have these crazy, I mean, kind of MC Hammer style pants, big puffy pants, bright colors. They're doing all these marches. It's very dancey. Lincoln becomes captivated by this guy that's in charge of these Zouaves from New York. His name is Elmer Ellsworth. Lincoln is like, okay, what can we do to keep this kid around? So he gets some of the guys that work for him for the campaign, offer him a job as a law clerk or working here in the office. And Elmer Ellsworth is like, I have no law training. You know, I have no intellect. I'm a military man. And what's funny about Elmer is he's not really in the military, right? He's just playing military. He's more of a dancer. Lincoln's like, okay, well, whatever it takes. How about we just get you to do these parades as part of the campaign? So Ellsworth's like, oh, cool. So he starts working for the campaign so Lincoln can be around this beautiful kid. Now, keep in mind, Lincoln is now a grown adult man. You know, he's a middle-aged man, and Ellsworth is in his 20s. Lincoln wins the presidency and immediately wants Elmer around. So he's like, I'm going to put you in the military. And so he makes Ellsworth a colonel. Lincoln signs a letter, two letters, in fact, to the War Department, insisting that Elmer Ellsworth becomes a colonel, and stations him at the White House. Ellsworth's around at Lincoln's command at any moment. You know, a lot of people believe he's living in the White House. The war hasn't started yet, right? It's very tense with the South. Lincoln is standing in the White House. He looks across the Potomac, you know, on the you know, Southern sympathizing side. And at a hotel across the Potomac, they have a Confederate flag waving above the hotel. And it always irks Lincoln. Well, Ellsworth makes note of this. So Ellsworth is tasked to go across the river and cut some of the telegraph lines to make it difficult for, you know, the South to communicate. And while he's over there, he takes it upon himself to go up into this hotel and take this flag down. And the proprietor of the hotel shoots Elmer Ellsworth dead. Now, this is the first casualty of the Civil War. He was a huge war hero. When he was shot, he was bleeding. They took the Confederate flag that they tore down. They wrapped it around him to soak the blood up. They cut up that flag, and there are little pieces of that Confederate flag at museums all across the country. Lincoln was beside himself. He couldn't stop sobbing. And there are multiple reports of Lincoln couldn't leave the White House. If his name was mentioned, he'd just be sobbing. And as one of the scholars says, he sobbed more at Ellsworth's death than his own son's death a year later.
How did they answer the question of, like, why is this guy so inconsolable?
Well, when I talk to scholars about this, other, you know, more conservative scholars, they will say that Lincoln formed a father-son bond with this guy. Like, you know, his sons were much younger. This is the son that he could always imagine wanting to have. And that's how they justified it. You know, he was so affected by it that he went down to where Elmer Ellsworth's corpse was being held and slept on his coffin. Now, we're not trying to make the case that they had sex. I mean, this is a much older man. Elmer Ellsworth had a fiance. I don't think they went there, but I think he had a major, major crush, love, affection for this kid. What happened shortly after that, and this gets to the person number four, Dr. Balcerski in the film From Occidental makes the point, like, well, this kind of opened up Lincoln's heart again. In walks Captain David Derrickson. There's a little place just outside of Washington that's now called the Lincoln Cottage that people can go and tour. It's a national site that Lincoln would go to in the summers to get away from the hustle and bustle. And out there was a big military hospital, and they felt like Lincoln needed, you know, security, a bodyguard. So David Derrickson became his bodyguard. And what's interesting here is we have a ton of evidence that showed that Lincoln and Derrickson would sleep in the same bed together while Mrs. Lincoln was away. Derrickson's superior officer talked about it in his book. Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Chamberlain wrote a book about that brigade and all their duties, and talked explicitly a couple pages about how Lincoln just had this deep affection for this guy. Their intimacy was very deep. He would wear Lincoln's nightshirts. And that went on for months and months. The thing that's interesting is he would only do it when Mrs. Lincoln wasn't around. Did she know? Did she not want to know? It's hard to say. There's no evidence of it, but he clearly wasn't doing it in front of her. When you look at Chamberlain's book, he's passing zero judgment on it. He's not saying it was peculiar or strange. He was just stating the facts. No problem. No big deal. It's not, and everyone knew about it. In fact, Gustavus Fox, who was his assistant secretary of the Navy, his wife, Virginia Fox, wrote, and we have a letter of her. There's this one part in it where she says, "What stuff?" Like it with an exclamation point, like, "What stuff?" And some people are like, "Well, you know, she's saying what stuff? Like, I can't believe Lincoln is sleeping with a man." But the way I interpret it is that how I'm surprised that a man of Lincoln's stature, what stuff, is with this lowly captain. He's not even with a general. He's not even with a colonel. He's with this like little lowly captain. I think it's more of a hierarchical thing. And it's so funny when you approach these more conservative scholars, there's nothing they can say to that one.
How does the historic record change over time and become general knowledge?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think what's important is that our hope is that this could spark the imagination of historians, because history is an evolving thing. People point to, well, that's revisionist history. That's revisionist history. Well, lots of things are revisionist history if you find new evidence and see it in a new light. You look at your queer heroes. There's lots of artists that are queer heroes. There's Harvey Milk. There's, you know, there's certainly Mayor Pete. And there's people that are in the contemporary space. But the idea that the greatest president of the United States was a queer person is so inspiring and so comforting. He was queer in a way that is so open. I feel like you look at Lincoln, the way he loved men and the way he loved his wife. I guess you would say if you had to apply queer or pan or bi, whatever you want to apply to him, he was open. So his heart was open to love others, you know, and he, ahead of his time, was deeply affected by slavery and was open to the trials and tribulations of the slaves at the time, to the point where he died in the act of freeing them. This is a man whose love guided his politics. That's what I hope people take away from the film, is seeing a side of Lincoln that they may not have seen before.
Wow. Well, Sean Peterson, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Learned so much from the film, fascinated by the subject. So thank you so much for joining us here on This Way Out.
He is considered a sacred figure by both Republicans and Democrats.
He led the nation through its greatest crisis.
He's on our currency. We build monuments to him.
He's the greatest president the United States has ever had.
Today, the big question that people are asking is, was Abraham Lincoln gay?
In the 19th century, for many men, their closest relationships were other men, and same for women.
Men would live with another man when they're single, and often did, and shared beds.
Lincoln probably slept in the same bed with men more than he did with women.
One of the things that fascinates scholars is his bedding down with Joshua Speed for 4 years.
There is love between those two men.
When you put together all of the evidence, it's really startling.
Lincoln has a type: dashing, daring.
We have this notion that if you have an attraction like that, boom, that's your orientation.
Sexuality through the mid-19th century was far more fluid.
But for someone who wanted a political career, it was mandatory that you have a wife.
Dear Speed, I shall be very lonesome without you. Yours forever, Lincoln.
What you have in the 19th century was very strict marriage culture. Get married, and then everything is possible.
Captain David Derrickson became friends with Lincoln while they were living here at the cottage.
There is a soldier here devoted to the president, and when Mrs. L is not home, sleeps with him. What stuff?
He was seen wearing the president's nightshirt.
If you want a smoking gun, here it is.
But then you see all these shifts to the end of the 19th century.
Freud was devastating to sexuality, defining very rigid categories.
And they're saying if a man loves another man, it's unnatural.
Homosexuality is a mental illness.
It was not only wrong, it was punishable. If Lincoln were to look down today, he would see the United States at a particularly fragile moment.
History is so important because it allows us to understand who we were, who we might become.
Lincoln's legacy is the insistence on equality.
We have been in the house of power.
If you can accept a queer Lincoln, you can accept queer people overall.
He should inspire us to achieve a true democracy for everyone.
I'm Brian DeShazer for This Way Out.
Find the podcast of Brian's complete interview with Sean Peterson at thiswayout.org. Lover of Men, The Untold Story of Abraham Lincoln is now streaming on Apple TV and Amazon Prime. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Marcos Nahara and Rhett and produced by Brian DeShazer, who also produced this week's Lincoln biopic feature and wrote and hosted The Rainbow Rewind with Sherry Lund. Tom Petty performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Harry Richardson of Socorro, New Mexico, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating 50 years together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WIUP Indiana, Pennsylvania, 2CCC Gosford, New South Wales, KZZA Eureka, California, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
Portland.
Running the time on the inside. Got just a few seconds left. Just a few seconds left. Strange people. People born just a little different than you and I. Are you ready?
Come join the Radio Lost and Found Sideshow Wagon as it rolls